guys. So I'm here with Shelby Mongan. You may remember her as one of the departing, I don't know, cast members of Your Stories this year. Shelby left for the faraway land of Dayton. How is Dayton treating you, Shelby?
It's boring.
It's boring. Cool. Is it? So you would say you miss Your Stories a lot?
Terribly. I look forward to the podcast every month, and curse the fact that I've yet to time coming back at the same time as Your Stories.
Okay, great. This interview's over. No, Shelby.
Fine, I'm out.
Shelby nominated Chris Crotwell's story with Apologies to My Ex-Wife, which is interesting. It's obviously a great story, but also there's kind of a neat twist on that in that you are Chris's current girlfriend, which I wonder, does that play into your how you take the story versus how other people take it? So, what stuck with you about that story?
Well, when Chris and I, because we talk about our stories before Your Stories every month, and when he told me that month was going to be a story about his ex-wife, I'm not going to say I didn't expect to like the story, but I didn't think it was going to be my favorite story he's ever told, which ironically it ended up being. What I love about the story and what I think is the most important about it is at Your Stories, all of the regulars tell their own particular kind of story, and the combination that they bring together is what makes the whole night so beautiful. And so what I think Chris does really well is a combination of funny anecdotes and professor-like tirades about how people should live their lives. And, you know, if anyone can give a tirade, it is Christopher Crotwell. And so what I think is really amazing about that story is that he took an event that could have just been funny stories to talk about his ex-wife liking Blue's Clues and what not to wear and some terrible media, and instead, and without making fun of her or anyone, turned it into a really positive advice for people. I think the best testament to why the story is great is that I have heard it quoted in other people's stories more than once. I know Mike Chuck talked about it. A couple people have mentioned it in stories, his advice. And I think if that's not a lasting testament, what else is?
For sure. Chris's stories have a way of sticking with people. And I'm glad that he showed up on this year-end list for the second year in a row. So let's all enjoy his story.
About just over 3 years ago, I started a journey of self-discovery and growth, and that journey was catalyzed by a great American coming-of-age ritual, our ceremony of separation, divorce. And this is an apology to my ex-wife. From being a very small child, I was let know, I was made to be aware that I was more intelligent than most people. And this is like not something I just decided was true. Various institutions, agencies sanctioned to make this a thing, testing organizations, they let you know. And they sit you down in a room and they say that you're special. And then you get a separate class in public school. You get gifted class. And all of that encouragement can really fuck somebody up. It really can. And where that factors into this story is I started reading Pitchfork in the sixth grade. Religiously. Like, religiously. I read those music reviews every day. And that was a point in time where I realized that the way that I felt about things and being critical about the other things that people liked could be really satisfying and interesting and give me an enormous power that not everyone had. And it's sort of a maniacal impulse at that age. And so that's the point at which I became an arbiter of taste. A gatekeeper of culture, if you will. I like the good things, goddammit, and they're better than the fucking things you like. And I know that because everyone told me I was smarter than you, so man. So, if this sort of thing goes unchecked all the way through high school, like, what you're building is a monster, essentially. And then you, like, you start your first serious relationship. A person with whom you will eventually agree, like, yes, we're going to spend all of the rest of our time together, we'll be married. But you know what, like, I don't know if you know this, but bad foundations at the very, very base of a marriage, sneering contempt, awful. Don't bring that in with you. That's cancerous. And the desire to educate someone about what good things are. Look, like, we're nerds, and one of the best things about being nerds is that there's this intersection between intelligence and passion, That means that when we like things, we like them really well. We like things better than most people. But, and this is where I might run into a bone of contention, we do not like better things than people. So back up. We might like things better, but we don't like better things. But we think that we do. And when you come into a relationship and you meet someone, it's, I always say at this point in my life, I've learned so much, I've grown so much, because divorce is a really beautiful thing that really pushes people to become the people that they can be. I always say it's a partner, not a project. So that's one I picked up. You're not fixed people, they're just people. And you're not a professor, you should be a partner, so shut the fuck up and listen every once in a while. I realized a couple years ago after the divorce that being an arbiter of taste was not something I wanted to be anymore. And even though I seem like a huge asshole in the story right now, and that's sort of the point, keep in mind, if I described someone whose favorite bands were Black Eyed Peas and Hoobastank, and whose favorite two TV shows were, like, the favorite things on TV were E! Red Carpet Interviews and like, Big Bang Theory, I don't mean to be too much, but if I say, like, if I start describing this man, and I say, like, his favorite movie is Daredevil, but only the full screen version. Full screen Daredevil is his favorite movie. You start to get antsy. And you see this person in your head and you start to judge them. Don't act like you don't. And that's a bad impulse. Because you don't know shit about him. Like, you don't know what he's like. We like things really well. Nerds like things really well. But when we decide that we don't like things, we are infuriating and nasty and impossible to deal with. It is too much. Right? When it comes to, like, that educating thing, like, you find somebody that you like, you enjoy, you like being around them, you enjoy their company, and then you realize that they haven't seen any of the Indiana Jones movies, and it keeps you awake at night. Don't act like it doesn't. But, like, here's a tip. Someone didn't start dating you to get an education in the things you fucking like. They don't give a shit what you like. They like the things they fucking like. And one of the rudest things you can possibly say to someone is that they have bad taste. Because what you've done is you've minimized them as a person. You said the things that make them feel good don't matter. And you said that you're better. And living in a home with someone like that must be awful. Yeah. Right? That can't be good. But it's so easy to do. You know? Like, we're all arbiters of taste in our own way. Like, these things are good things, these things are bad things. Too easily, we'll take the sum of a person's likes and dislikes and try to drum up a picture of who they are in our heads. And that's not how it works. It doesn't really matter. The things that you like aren't better than things that other people like. And another thing that being an arbiter of taste does that's really awful for you is that it means the things you like end up in this bubble that just gets pushed around by what other people choose to like because you have the desire to be exceptional. It's about what you don't like, not what you do. It's an attitude specifically based on negativity. And when you let that negativity start to eat you up and you let it, like, that be the guiding force between the way that you deal with people, that sort of sneering contempt for the things that people enjoy. We do that pretty well too sometimes. And I know that I did it a lot. And I feel awful for that. In that spirit, Becky, you'll probably never hear this, but though I have philosophical issues with it, it's fine to like what not to wear. It's fine. That's totally fine. Clinton and Stacey are engaging, and I sort of like them too. It's fine. Another thing that being so snooty will do to you is that you won't like things that you think you like. Like, you like things, but you're guilty about it. You're not allowed to like the things you want to like because they're not good things. So you feel bad about, like, that's stupid. To Becky, look, I might never like Christian rock, and Reliant K is just not my bag, but I was such an asshole about that, and I'm super sorry. That was, like, totally off base. I shouldn't have been so critical. Blue's Clues wasn't written for your demographic. necessarily, but it has a pleasant aesthetic, and I understand why you love it. And it's fine. Like, it's fine. It's totally okay. And things that I wanted to make you like, it doesn't matter that you never wanted to watch Indiana Jones. It doesn't make you a worse person. It's just, you know, it's disappointing, but whatever. I shouldn't have been so shitty about it. That's the story. And all the other things, the bands I tried to force on you, the, like, how infuriating it must have been to have someone acting like they needed to tutor you in how to like things. Like, what a miserable way to have to be around a person all the time. I'm sorry. And, guys, we're really prone to doing that as a group of people. Try not to take that in your life with anybody. Let them like what they like. Like what you like. Don't push yourself on someone, because that's not what they're fucking there for, you assholes.